the character who wrote that, I'm sure, is going to be a technical advisor. In other words, a super university lawyer.
Yeah.
I can't follow Robert's Rules of Order, and if we ever really have to, I'm going to hire a parliamentarian to tell me, now you do this, you do that, you do the other thing, just like I get an income tax expert to say you can charge this off and you can't charge that off. So I did an awful lot of debating. I recall I was coming back from Wheeling, West Virginia. Believe me, there is such a city.
I was born there.
You are? You want to know something? It hasn't changed in the last 100 years.
I'll take it back. My mother was born there. So that goes back farther still.
And I worked out this method of operation, which might appeal to you. When we convened our brotherhood meetings, we convened them very formally. I had some resistance from certain members of our committee, but I simply steamrolled it, because if we're in session, we're in session. We read the minutes of the last meeting, and then we adjourned. I mean, we recessed for an informal discussion of business. Now, when you're in recess, Robert's Rules of Order do not apply, thank the Lord. You can be logical, you can be polite, you can cuss and discuss. And as we went along, Ruth will bear me out, whatever decisions we reached, we would simply incorporate in our informal minutes. And during this discussion, we would work out what resolutions we had to pass. We would decide who would make the resolution and second, and the wording would be worked out. And then at the end, we would reconvene the meeting. Resolution 1, Resolution 2, Resolution 3, and we'd adjourn. And this was all very formal then. But the formality was about 4 minutes at the beginning and about 5 minutes at the end. The rest of the time, we simply did business. I think that's a pretty good way of operating.
How long ago was it, Bill?
You still do that, Ruth? Good.
May I interrupt for a moment?
Right. I think that's a good way of conducting a meeting, because, frankly, I'm terrified at Robert's Rules of Order. In business, when I ran a corporation, one of Standard Oil subsidiaries, we simply cleared with our principal stockholder, who owned us 100%. And, of course, there it's much simpler. I wrote the minutes before the meeting and simply handed slips to people which told them what to do, and if they didn't do it, they'd be fired. But in the Brotherhood, I think this is a better method. We had another problem come up. Ruth Burton asked a question which practically provoked a civil war. She asked, what is the Urantian when it comes to chartering a local society?
What is what?
What is a Urantian?
Yeah.
The lady happens to be chairman of the charter committee.
Ruth is.
Yes.
Ruth.
Yeah. A very pertinent question. And in the course of about an hour, we had worked ourselves into much worse a hassle than the 12 apostles worked themselves into when Simon Peter gave one interpretation of Jesus' parables, and Nathaniel gave another, and they chose sides and had at it.
Did they hate yourself?
Huh?
Did they hate yourself?
No, they didn't hate. We didn't hate ourselves. We just got darn mad at each other. And I worked out a deal that I think you might use if you have a real policy problem on the West Coast. I suggested that we table the discussion. We divided sharply, at least three ways: liberals, conservatives, and middle of the road. And of course, everyone thought he was middle of the road. Naturally. There are those to the right, most to the left, and I am sensible. And there were just no meeting of minds. Now, the great weakness of a democracy is debate. because spoken words are as cheap as current dollars, which may get even cheaper. You don't give a darn what you say because there's no record.
Well, what's the alternative to spoken words?
Written words. What we did was this, and I recommend this if you folks ever get in a hassle. We tabled the whole discussion. We then agreed to present our opinions in writing. Now, the minute you start writing, you start thinking, because anybody can read what you've written. And a lot of the hot air goes out of your talk. You begin to think. You're not propagandizing. I requested permission of the executive committee to appoint a subcommittee. And since Ruth had stirred up this hassle, I got even with her. I made her chairman of the subcommittee. The subcommittee consisted of three people. But three people can't work. This is nine times as inefficient as one person. So the job I gave Ruth was this. As chairman of this subcommittee, she and she alone had to do the job of reconciling all these opinions. And then she had to sell her reconciliation to her other two committee members. Right. Which keeps her from being biased. Why write something that's lopsided? Because right away you got two people to go up against. And whatever the subcommittee recommended, we'd listen to. Net result, I don't know how you felt about it, Ruth, but I remember when I wrote my opinion. And I said, they've got to do it this way. There's no other way to operate. This is the only way you could do it.
Did you win?
No.
Oh.
When I got the collective opinion back, I wouldn't even defend my own recommendation. I like the collective opinion much better. Now, this is a method of working efficiently and still democratically. Please note, we stopped the debate. And believe me, it was getting to the place where we were going to start throwing chairs at each other. Everyone put their opinion in writing. One person, only one person, did the editorial job. Again, this is efficient. But this person had the obligation of selling.
Who are the three people? What?
Ruth.
Ruth.
Right.
Doctor. And
who are the other two, Ruth?
Okay, I think Doctor. And I think it was Russell.
I can't remember. I recall it seemed to me fitting that you should do the dirty work because you stirred up all the hassle.
Anyone with an idea gets a job.
Right. You see the point, one person did the work, but that conclusion had to be acceptable to two other people. This depersonalizes it. And what we got, as I recall, went through almost without change, didn't it?
Yes, it was really very interesting. Once the thing got written down,
yes.
People really were thinking about it, agreement was not difficult.
I think you've got a problem. If you try to operate a pure democracy, you're frankly going to hell in a handbasket. It won't work. If you try to steamroller things and run a dictatorship, you're not a society.
Revolts are abundant.
Why, of course they are. You simply build up pressure and it blows off. I think if you're ingenious, you can provide for complete self-expression and still operate with reasonable efficiency. The nearest thing to a pure democracy that ever existed was Athens, and I submit Athens was a colossal failure. Sparta whipped her. Well, so much for that, for what it's worth. Number two, do the thought adjusters who have had previous experience get personality thereby? The answer is, some do, some don't. Thought adjusters may acquire experience in many different ways. The fact that an adjuster has experience does not necessarily mean that a human being has failed to survive.
It doesn't.
No. In the case of spirit-fused mortals, all of them were a gesture indwelt, and none of
them. A lone proposition.
A lone proposition, exactly. In the case of the worlds of the non-breathers, the adjusters come there in perpetuity, but none of them can hope for fusion.
And where do they go?
Assigned. And they have acquired the experience of indwelling that particular mortal creature. You have I, V, X, L, C, M. And I guess M with a line over it is myriad, which is 10,000, and that's the biggest number they had.
Myriad.
Yes, a myriad is, and that's Greek, I think, for 10,000.
The nice word.
Mm-hmm.
Myriad stars.
And Havona launched. In talking about the first universe age, we can make an observation. It has no origin in time, does it? But it does have an ending in time, doesn't it? It ends when the second universe age is born. And I have elected to present the opening of the second universe age as the creation of the 21 ancients of days. If you're going to pick a marker, it seems to me that's as good as any. I think when these,
where are you in the full media?
21 ancients of days were created and commissioned. I think this is the essence of the dawn of the present universe age, the second universe age, the age of the seven super universes. Yes.
The Eternals were created with Havona?
Yes. So were the Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy.
Oh, yeah.
Eternals of Days means just what the name implies. Mm-hmm. And Ancients of Days, they're the oldest beings in existence. Anyone behind them doesn't have age. They've always been around. You know, this isn't going to be quite as bad as you think. When you fuse with your thought adjuster, one of the contributions which the adjuster will make to the new being is past eternal memory. Now, I don't believe that your human consciousness will be able to absorb that past eternal memory beyond the limits of achieved comprehension.
Will it vary with the individual?
I think it will vary with your lifespan. In other words, I think when you have lived upon the mansion worlds 10,000 years, I think the adjuster will be able meaningly to communicate to you 10,000 years worth of past time. And when you have lived a billion years, the adjuster will be able to communicate to you in those terms. And when you have lived a trillion trillion years, you'll be able to go quite a ways back. I've got an Absonite number. Very handy. This is a second floor number. When you have lived a jillion years, the adjuster will be able to do quite a lot with you. Do you follow me?
Yeah.
You have to have capacity to comprehend. And you've got to stretch your comprehension capacity, and that's going to take
time. The size of the picture we are there.
Will not hold a quart.
What
better? And remember,
I know we do.
Remember, Ruth, if your soul were mature, you wouldn't wake up on the mansion worlds because these are incubating worlds designed to do for premature souls just what an incubation job does for a premature birth in a hospital. Your soul continues to grow. And that's the limiting factor. A little better, a little better, and it keeps on growing. IQ will not be equalized until you graduate from the Marantia life and leave Salvington. At this point, even then, we're told flatly, intellectual differentials are equalized. Now, please, let's go back to resurrection morn. And let's take inventory of precisely what happens. Let's say that, to simplify matters, let's say that you have a personal seraphim. So you make it on the third day. I just don't want to have to deal with a mass of people, see. And you are waking up in one of the private resurrection rooms off the main amphitheaters. And they are getting ready for you. They've got 3 days' warning. So the proper authorities go over to the Marantia Quartermaster Department, and they draw out of issue one standard GI form, first stage Marantia, suitable for the type of being that you were. And we can deduce that your new form will be suitable because we're told that non-breathers who survive speak the system language by a modified technique, which means that they do not have breathing forms. This would be too big a shock for them, probably. Your form will be appropriate to what you were. Right. This is a standard quartermaster issue Marantia form. Pretty undifferentiated. In time, you will etch your character on this form. It'll be a lot more plastic and responsive than the physical body. In time, we etch something of ourselves on our faces, don't we? Right. That's right. You know, as you grow older, you can't avoid wrinkles. But you got a choice as to which kind. You want the sour kind or the grinning kind? This choice you have. Okay. We now have, for some reason, in a marble slab. This is an anti-morgue. We've got one perfectly still Marantia quartermaster. The Marantia issue form started dripping. I think of it as being pulled out of some pickling deal. Again, forgive me for being solly, but if I'm solly, I'm not spooky. And I get through to you. You've got your seraphim or your seraphic pair standing by, and they've got we'll resurrect Ruth. She got us into this. This seraphim number Steen on 12 has got Ruth's soul in custody.
Who has it now?
The seraphim. Although either one of them, I take it, they're perfectly competent to hang on to Ruth's Marantia soul. There's a life carrier standing by. This Marantia form isn't alive. And this life carrier has to catalyze life in that form. You'll recall the life carrier does not create life. Yeah. It transmits life. It is a catalytic agent. The thought adjuster is standing by. And then, I don't know that this sequence is exactly right, but my inventory is correct, whether I've got it in the right order or not. The seraphim deposits Ruth's soul in the appropriate spot in this Marantia body. I think of the soul as belonging somewhere about an inch and a half just above and behind the eyes. Isn't that where each of you feel that you live? A little above and behind your eyes? Somewhere in that area. All right. They take a circuit of Marantia mind. This is not the seven adjutant mind.
It isn't.
No.
What is it?
This mind is Marantia mind. It's a different... It's another mind endowment of the creative mother spirit, suitable to this level of life. And they encircuit that mind in this Marantia form. let's stop and talk about what that means. Again, I've got a homely illustration. Think of a rope. Put a loop in it. I think of that loop as being the encirclement of the seven adjutant mind endowment in Ruth's cortex right now. Mm-hmm. That's what she's thinking with, I hope. Yeah.
Is it attached to ours and all of them?
Into the loop tied to the universe mother spirit on Salvation. As long as Ruth is alive, this living cortex can maintain the integrity of that loop as something segregated within that circuit. And when Ruth dies, they just pull the loop out of the circuit. Your mind is gone. And you never use that mind again. Up on Mansion World Number 1, they do the same thing with another kind of rope. This is Marantia rope now. They put another loop in there.
Nylon.
The soul is deposited. The adjuster takes up its seat of residence, adjacent to or within or in relationship to the soul. And so far, you can account for everything beautiful. But there's something else that's missing. Your personality. No one knows where it's